this.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Man in Line. 6 minutes past 12. We're on air till one today with Ray Harmer, MHK, Minister of Policy and Reform. There were 30 new cases of COVID-19 identified yesterday. That's 130 total in the community. 459 people are waiting for the result of a test. And today, 364 people booked in at the grandstand for a COVID-19 test. From the vaccination dashboard, there have been 64,000 vaccination dashboard is updating in front of my very eyes. And we're saying that 64,160 first doses have been administered, 51,646 second doses administered, 4,831 people booked in for the next 7 days for a jab. DHSC is holding 9,015 shots of vaccine in stock at the moment. Ray Harmer, MHK, in front of us today, Minister of Policy and Reform. You've been double jabbed, I take it?
Yes.
You're 2+2.
I'm 2+2.
That is. Obviously, there's going to be an announcement tomorrow. Comin was meeting yesterday. How prominent is COVID? Is it still numbers 1, 2, and 3 on the agenda?
Yes, it's the first item in every agenda, plus also additional meetings that can appear at any time, really, because it's always an evolving situation. And we have to react to everything that's going around us.
Okay, so we're anticipating something is going to change tomorrow as there is a briefing. In policy and reform, where do you sit across COVID planning?
Well, basically everything now comes into COVID and into Comin. COVID's very much a live issue, and in terms of obviously from a Cabinet Office point of view, drawing all of the different strands in terms of the work that's needed now more so at the border, but also in the past in terms of calling those that public health, because public health is very much part of Cabinet Office.
Okay, and in terms of policy and reform on a day-to-day basis, I mean, do you have COVID duties?
I have, as I say, mainly within Comin, which is almost a daily current. So when you say it's daily, I think everything is done collectively as a group. And probably I think we've met probably more times than probably that you'd meet in about three administrations. So and obviously there was very much involved in infrastructure and the oxygen plant and the delivery and the setup of Newlands. So, yes, COVID is very much been my life and all of ours, I suppose, for the last 18 months. Also economic recovery group. So I'm part of that economic recovery group that delivering the economic policies going forward.
Just get to the oxygen first. Where are we? Are we completely okay with supplies of oxygen?
Yes, we are. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. And at the moment, the minister was talking about cases not being that important. Hospitalisation is the one thing we have to keep our eye on. Nobody in hospital at the moment, so everything is steady as she goes at the moment.
Absolutely. I think that's the absolute key thing. I think the vaccine, particularly 2+2, has broken the link between cases and hospitalisations and mortality. And I think it is a game changer. It is a change of the way we think about things, the way we address our lives. And it is, as we've moved to mitigation, it's about moving away from, if you like, government taking involved in every aspect of life, to individuals taking more and more, and companies and businesses taking more responsibility.
So would you, I mean, some businesses have obviously reacted to the changes regarding COVID as well. And you said it's now down to individuals and businesses to react to the situation. Lots of people feel a bit uncomfortable about that. They like the government being in charge.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's the danger if we're all honest about this. I mean, actually, we can't continue. And in some ways, it does give you that feel of protection. But if you're not going to do that, when are you going to do it? This is a critical part, and obviously government's there to support, but it's also up to all of us to move forward and to really take that responsibility. and in terms of also those that haven't yet, you know, been vaccinated, I would implore them to register. You can still register to be vaccinated. And
yeah, okay. I mean, from the start of the pandemic, the kind of mantra has been, you know, test, test, test. The Isle of Man's now allowing people to arrive on the island without testing. They can still transmit it. So why doesn't the island test everybody coming in?
I think we are getting back to normality, and it comes back to what I've said before. You know, it's the break between cases and hospitalisation. And we are, it is moving towards, if you like, a terrible illness, but it's nothing like the same. It is mitigated massively. And the other thing is, when you move to mitigation, you can't move to half mitigation. So a number of the outbreaks actually came from the changes that were made in the end of May, which was about residents finally being able to see their family and to see close friends, you know, and things like that, and be able to go off the island. That actually is one of those cases that then triggered in June. So in some senses, when you're in mitigation, you're in mitigation, and you can't sort of have half mitigation, and it's about finally returning back to normal. I come back to my earlier point, if not now, then when? And we've got to be very, very careful, because you've only seen how the state can invidiously get involved in everything that you do, every aspect of your life, and at some point we have to start breaking free.
Ray Harmer, MHK, is with us today, Minister of Policy and Reform. And if you want to get in touch, lots of texts coming in, and we've got some questions also. And if you want to call 66 1368. We've talked about the vulnerable on the Isle of Man. The Isle of Man, many other places, has worked to protect the vulnerable, but the definition of vulnerable kind of changes. It was the elderly who are now double vaccinated, to people who can't have a vaccine, people who've got complex medical needs, and children as well. What's the thinking on that? What's the strategy?
Well, the strategy really is around that. Yes, those people that you know, with the JCVI list, it was the most those groups got the vaccine first, and it very much is around those sort of the vaccine being the most important. After that, it is mitigations within, you know, it will be encouraging more sort of ventilation. People can take their own precautions as regard mask wearing and so forth. But when we move to that we're moving to an element where most people by mid-August will be 2 plus 2, most of the adult population. And again, I come to my other point, there are still 8,000 people, just over 10% that haven't been vaccinated. The more people get vaccinated, the more protection the island has, and the more that we can actually go move forward with confidence. Obviously, we're still concerned, very, very much concerned about all types of vulnerable people, and particularly those that can't have the vaccine.
Do you think the government messaging around the purpose of the vaccine is appropriate? Do you think some people think they're invincible and don't need the vaccine?
I think that's part of it, but it's not just about doing it for yourself. It's about doing it for the community, because I think you made the point that actually it doesn't stop transmission completely, but people who aren't vaccinated are massively more going to transmit the disease, are going to more likely succumb to the disease, and if not for yourself, then do it for others, because ultimately, I know we're one of the best nations in the world in terms of our percentage, but if we could get it even further, if it was not just 88% of the adult population, but if it was 95-96%, that is the best way that we can protect all of the vulnerable as well.
Okay, a question in from Roger just said, for the last time, can a government official inform us of the travel capability of those affected by those three batch numbers from that Indian-produced vaccine? This is the Covishield one.
That, as far as the Isle of Man's concerned, we aren't impacted at all. That's my understanding.
So if anybody turns up with that batch number on their card, they should be able to travel.
Yes.
Lots of questions. I was wondering if anybody has heard of the news from overseas about certain airlines being stopped from flying. The insurance has been refused due to a mandatory jabbing of all pilots, several of which have died post-COVID jab. We don't know more about that, but we'll certainly get onto that in the newsroom. You mentioned economic recovery, Ray Harmer. We've spent a fortune on this. Obviously, the steam packet's in the hole for £10.5 million as well. Now a publicly owned company. What's the thinking? Obviously, policy and policy will certainly come into this.
It is, and I think the best thing that we ever did, one of the things in our administration, is buy the steam packet, secure that link. You know, you dread to think what would have happened if we hadn't had that. And part of what the economic recovery is about maintaining, if you like, the economic infrastructure of the island. So maintaining that capacity that we do still have, hotels, hospitality sector still working, still able to move forward as the economy recovers. I mean, obviously, it was a significant hit, but by presenting that capacity. But there's also another important point, and a lot of work has happened this year, and this is about looking forward in terms of our economy. It's not just about looking backwards, because what has happened is actually drives a lot of potential and opportunities. For example, 800, and this will be borne out in the census, we hope, but 800 new people added to the population, working people. People can work from the Isle of Man and be anywhere in the world. That is a massive game changer. Green technology and green tech is a game changer as well. And in terms of virtual working, having those sort of teams and companies. So we've really got to move on the front foot. As well as that, we've got challenges with our 010 and with the corporation taxation in terms of the OECD and those sort of factors. So we've got to respond to those taxation events. So actually this year, a lot of work. And now that we've got KPMG in terms of our partner developing that economic strategy, that is really important that we strike the iron while it's hot, while economies will be starting to recover and grow.
Claire Barber, MHK, is going to be standing in Douglas East, and we'll be hearing from Claire Barber before the end of Man in Line today. But for the moment, Ray Harmer, one of the Peel MHKs, is with us in his capacity of Minister for Policy and Reform. And Juan is on Man in Line now. Afternoon, Juan. You're live with Ray Harmer.
Good afternoon, Ray. Good afternoon, Andy. I'm certainly not one of them people that's hanging on to the 4 o'clock meeting asking government what I should do. I get on with my life, so you can count me out from that one. I did notice today 21 cases in Gibraltar, 15 of them are double vaccinated. Very interesting. Going on to the first point, the poison chalice, obviously, of the promenade, which was in your hands to start with. Just wanted to know what the original agenda was for the design of the promenade and how it's ended up like it is. And my second question to you would be, as part of the Secret Seven and in Comin, and policy and reform, where do you see the island heading in 10 years' time with the massive rollout that's happening around the world and the green agenda? How is that going to affect us as an island, as a farming and fishing island, and the policies that your government, as it stands at the moment, are introducing aligned with what's happening in the world, in so much as... Are we getting information here? Is what's happening here good for our island, or are we just following a world agenda on stuff?
Okay, yeah, thank you, June. There's three sort of points of the questions. I think the point about double vaccination is that it doesn't ever prevent completely COVID, but it does massively reduce the and certainly reduces hospitalisation and death, and also transmission. So it's really positive at that point. Now, coming back to the promenade... I'm glad you asked that question, because the fundamental thing about the promenade is it is an engineering. It goes in places between 2 and 5 metres deep, and we have gas pipes that are well beyond their age, that could, you know, that have been shown to be incredibly fragile, sewage linking into the bay, fire hydrants not sufficient for actually if there was a fire. And also the highway itself, the construction was two concrete plates, and all of those had shattered and crumbled. So, including voids. So, the prom was a huge, massive engineering thing that had to be done, and everybody agreed with that. If we hadn't have done that, then we would have had much worse problems going forward in terms of what could have happened. And in terms of the design, I know a lot of focus is on, if you like, the top surface. But remember, from Broadway to the right the way to the electric railway, that is all actually mostly a like for like reconstruction. So yes, I think and I think you'll see in the next few months you'll see a massive change, because although if it was a large scale building, it would be absolutely huge if you piled all of the complex sort of cabling and so forth. But they're now doing the final element, and that's the bit that, if you like, you'll start to see things looking really good. But that's going to take another 2-3 months. Now, in terms of the, if you like, policy and reform, and are we leading? No, in many ways we are leading rather than just following. And I think There's different elements around, if you like, the green agenda. I think it's very much going to have to be part and parcel of being normal. So, for example, governments having electric cars with their small fleet. For example, houses moving, buildings made more towards a zero carbon or net passive house. But fundamentally, an easy win straight away is to put solar panels on all of our government buildings. So that's a key one. Now, one area that we have the potential to lead the world is blue carbon. Now, if I explain a little bit about that, 4,000 square kilometres, I think, if I got my numbers right, is actually our territorial waters, and only a tenth of that is the land. That has a massive potential of storing carbon, and we need to know a lot more about it. Potentially, we could store an additional 220,000 tonnes. Our current annual production is about 700,000. That is a potential by growing seagrass and things like that. We could actually lead the world. So there are areas in the green space where we are obviously taking the best advice, and that's becoming normal now. And there's other areas where we can lead the world. And so it's a mixture of both.
Okay, what was your other question, Julian?
I think that was kind of it. I was more concerned. I understand what you're saying there. I'm more concerned with, there's obviously a massive amount of stuff that's happening with smoke and mirrors behind the COVID situation, and there's massive changes going on in the world which is being engineered while we've been sitting there with our eyes closed. So this green agenda's been rolling out for a while, but there's a massive, massive push on it now. And where we are predominantly and have been an agriculture and fishing, and that's something which the agriculture-wise is going to get dried up. And if you look around the world, there's already shortages happening, which is meant to be. So that's the question that I'm asking you. Where are we heading in the future? I mean, we've got a lot of people depending on that over here. And in the worldwide scope of things, we're talking about not having beef and stuff in the food chain. Well, the farm and the land and all the green spaces, there aren't going to be any cows and sheep anything anymore, because no one's going to keep them as pets. So you're going to end up with just empty barren fields around the place. So I'm just trying to ascertain, are we looking at the best interests of the Isle of Man here? Or are we just, like you said, we want to be a world leader in something? Are we following world agendas again?
Okay. All right.
That's a very good point. I think farming is a critical, and fishing is, from Peel, it's massively critical to what we need to do.
In terms of finance, it's not much of GDP, is it?
But I think if COVID's taught us anything, it's actually being able to have security of your own food supply is really vitally important, both livestock and, crops and so forth. I think there is scope for we also export quite a lot of lamb and beef. I think that will still be there to an element. I don't think that we shouldn't, and we need to have our farming. We need to have much more, sustainable farming. I'm pleased that Manx Wildlife Trust are involved with some of that, but also allowing our spaces around our hedges to grow to improve the environment. I think there'll be changes to our farming, but I think that's something we can definitely work with farmers.
Okay. All right, Joan, thanks for calling.
Thanks, Andy. Thank you, Ray.
Good to talk to you. Thank you. Just going back to agriculture, obviously in terms of GDP, it's not a vast amount, but the agriculture sector, the farming sector, they husband the landscape. They look after the landscape. They keep it green and tidy and as it is. So they may not punch, their weight in finance, but they punch above their weight in terms of the aesthetics and the ecology of the Isle of Man.
Absolutely, and for our biosphere. 88% of the land is agriculture, and you know, it's a relatively small sector, you would think, but that seems massive. 88% without the farming and being able to sort of have those sustainable farming practices, which I know they do a fantastic job and they need support. Without them, we can't meet our you know, our obligations, both environmentally and in our biosphere.
Okay, there's a question in that said, Mr. Baker's confirmed on a number of occasions over the past few weeks that it was when Mr. Harmer was in infrastructure that this is when these so-called de-scoping agreements were made with the contractors. This, in effect, has transferred the cost of finishing the promenade to the agreed contract levels from the contractor back to the Manx taxpayer. Is this right?
No, it's a lot more complicated than that. There are small elements that were, I think the there's around the roundabouts. There's some areas that, but 99% or 90% of the prom is as was originally designed. If you can see the stonework, which looks fantastic. You can see around the cultured area that's fantastic. What was clear from the first COVID issue was that we moved to a fixed price contract, and that actually has been a very good call, because as we've seen over the last few months, how prices for raw materials, for labour, is starting to shoot up.
Sure.
So actually fixing the price at that point was really, really important, and to deliver it. I mean, we've lost, I mean, it's easy to, as well as COVID, it's easy to think that we've lost about 6 months.
That was a point that came in. Somebody said, could Mr. Harmer confirm what effect in terms of a time lag has COVID actually had on the prom?
Massive. I mean, I'm underestimating it for 6 months, because when you warm down, if you're told to stop working, it takes a lot to put the site into abeyance, and then you've got to restart, and that takes a long time. Also, a lot of workers came from across. I think there's a recent batch from Romania. Those workers, some of the, we don't have enough workers here to do the prom, and some of them are specialist skills. So when we were stopping that, we were having a huge impact. And if you add up each of those lockdowns and the time to move, scale back up and scale back down, we've lost a huge amount of time.
Do you think when the prom project was started, you understated to the public what was going on? If you'd said to the public, look, this is going to be a long-term project, it's going to be painful, and it could get worse.
I think I said everywhere that it was going to be painful. I think you can never say anything enough. I give that granted. But, you know, we privately, to all the politicians, MHKs, this is going to be horrendously painful. But once it's finished, and we'll see that in the next three months or so, obviously, it's there for the next 100 years. But I come back to why we did it. The infrastructure was massively failing. It was a gateway to Ireland. There was an option to sort of say, well, let's do it in a few months, or let's do it. You know, we needed to do it. It needed to be done. And if there had been something where, you know, a fire and we didn't have enough fire hydrants for a part of the prom, or if the gas main had blown, and there's a massive HV cable that had completely failed, we'd have lost lights in parts of Douglas. I think the key part, everything runs through that, through the Douglas Promenade, 6 million vehicle movements, and all the walkers and cyclists, and that, it's absolutely huge. There was no choice, and I think as part of an engineering project, it actually has achieved what it set out to achieve. Those things, we know where the services are, the services, the pipes have been replaced. I still take an interest, I still take photos, and to see how actually bad it was out there, in terms, because everything was just chucked in over the last 100 years. If you wanted to put a telephone cable in or a power cable, it was, and nobody knew where anything was. Now we've got a modern prom with electric charging points, you know, fiber for our national infrastructure, absolutely vital. There was no option, but we had to do it, and everybody agreed.
There's an uneasy feeling about the horse trams, though. There's an uneasy feeling amongst, particularly when the money was withdrawn, they now go to Castle Mona Avenue. There's an uneasy feeling that they may never go to the sea terminal.
I think they will. If I'm in the next house, then that's I will make sure that from my point of view, they will. I think the main thing is that they're there. I mean, one of the things I haven't talked about is the fact that the tram tracks were failing too and had a limited life left in them. And I actually think that if we'd done nothing at that point, there would be no horse trams. Because I think if it had been delayed and delayed and something or whatever happened and 10 years down the road, I think there would have been no horse trams whatsoever.
OK, Chop's with us on Man in Line now. Hello, Chop, you're live with Ray Harmer.
Hello, Fastamai, Andy, and Fastamai, Ray Harmer.
Fastamai.
The one question I really sort of bugs me, really, is this whole electric vehicles now. The government are really pushing us to go green and to buy these electric vehicles. But what is the government's policy on helping people to afford electric vehicles and also install the infrastructure? Because at the minute, you know, the government are really pushing for us to buy them and the next best thing since sliced bread. But there seems to be no support from the government. And also, and not only that, the government don't seem to be buying electric vehicles himself. Now that there's a few going around, don't get wrong, I've seen a few from Defo and even the post office have electric vehicles, but the government all seem to be really pushing this on us but not actually, you know, implement themselves. It seems to be good enough for the goose but not good enough for the gander, and I'm just wondering what the government's policy is around that.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think we need to have a step change. So thanks, Jobs. I think in sense of that I would like to see every new vehicle now from that is a small fleet, obviously it's lorries and things like that. I'd like to see every one of those that from now going forward buying electric. And obviously we talked about the prom there, we'll have EV charging. I think we do need to have a step change in the way we do that. There is a climate change consultation out. And we'll be going out over the summer, and I'd like everybody to take part of that. I'll be making a statement in Timor, but I think we do need to do a lot more about helping people to do that. One of the key things that we're looking to do first, if you like, where our emissions are really, really need to be reduced is around heating. So a green living grant to help people for insulation and things like that. And also our electricity supply, because obviously at the moment is predominantly gas powered and we need to move to more sustainable. So there are two key strategies in our climate change.
Nothing succeeds like money, though, Mr. Harmer. And if the government said, look, if you're buying an all-electric vehicle or a hybrid, there will be this amount of discount or this amount of tax relief. Manx people are early adopters with technology. They like new technology. Mm. So it seems sometimes that you're pushing an open door. The public are actually with you if you could just make it easier for them to do it.
I agree, and that's been one of my and I think we will see that. And one of my pressures, obviously, one of the easiest things that I could do was on car taxes is remove temporarily the for electric vehicles to try and encourage that. And I know there's tax incentives from across, but we need to do more. I appreciate it's an open door. I'm trying to get the policy from the centre to say, look, going forward, government cars need to be EVs. Yeah. Going forward, Manx utilities need to be putting the charging points. That's in the planning stages now. We need to move a lot faster. So I agree with some of the criticism on that because I think we can do more.
Isn't there a system at the moment whereby if a business leases an electric vehicle, that's not taxed as a benefit in kind? So if a company wants to lease an electric vehicle, the person who drives it through a company, so a commercial agreement, then that's not taxed. So that could be rolled out to everyone. If everyone bought an electric vehicle, they could get that, perhaps get a tax relief on it.
Agreed. And I think what's really important in this is having that just transition so that we do support those that that can least afford it. I think, interestingly enough, our car network is one of the oldest in because it's, I think, the average age is about 13 years, whereas across it's around about 7. So we need to provide those incentives. I think a tax relief would be one of those incentives to kickstart that. But I think the other point was the infrastructure. If you haven't got the charging points, and I know there's a commitment to have at least 10%. Of cars as charging points, but I think we need to move a lot quicker in that space.
Okay, anything else, Chop?
No, I thank you for the replies, Ray, but I just for a government that's really pushing us to go electric, I've said before a couple of times on the Man in Line, there seems to be no support from government. Now, I'm very lucky. I've got off-street parking. However, there's a lot of people out there that don't know. If the government really wants us to get electric vehicles and you live in a terraced house, for argument's sake, now, who pays for that electric charging points to be put inside your house or outside your house? And not only that, I mean, you know, if you had it outside your house, you're not always guaranteed to be parked outside your house. And like I've said it once, I've said it a thousand times, that there seems to be no support from central government to really sort of push this green agenda forward. And I see a lot of government vehicles driving around, and like Ray just said, you know, hopefully in the next time they renew the vehicles, that they should be electric. But it seems to be very, it's good enough for the goose, but not good enough for the gander.
Okay, all right. Okay, Chop, thanks for calling us today. We appreciate your call. Ray Harmer, MHK, Minister of Policy and Reform, live on Man in Line through till one today.
We appreciate that running a business can be a challenge and presents risks. At NFU Mutual, 100 years of insurance experience has taught us a lot. We pride ourselves on our local service and having real conversations with you to understand your unique needs and find the right cover for you. NFU Mutual work hard to ensure that claims are handled efficiently with minimum hassle to get you back to normal as soon as possible. For business insurance, call NFU Mutual on 674 191.
I didn't know where to turn to protect me and my children from my violent husband.
My partner verbally abused me, controlled how much money I could spend and who I could talk to.
But my advocate was compassionate and helped me with the police to stop the abuse.
My advocate helped me to get a court order to protect me and stay in my home.
If you need assistance, call Advocate Smith Torbitts Unsworth Limited on 677 888 or email reception at advocates.co.im.
Next time you're in Sulby, pop into the Ginger Hall.
Join the boys for our fine ales and continental lagers. And catch the sport on TV.
Meet the girls for food and enjoy our fine selection of wine and gins.
There's live music every weekend with a Celtic music jam session every third Sunday.
Or host your event in our 100-person capacity marquee.
The Ginger Hall has it all. Find us on Facebook.
Or pop in.
They got your whole house in their hands.
When you need scaffolding,
DPM.
On time and on budget,
DPM.
We'll beat any quote.
DPM, we do it all at DPM.
DPM promise to beat any like-for-like scaffolding quote by 10%. So when you need scaffolding, call the friendly, experienced DPM scaffolding team on 612000. T's and C's apply.
We do it all at DPM.
It's another Caroline North weekend from the Ross Revenge, with some great music from the 60s, 70s, 80s and just into the 90s. We have virtual money to give away in our competition, and the weekend is sponsored by 1to1days.com. Join us this weekend on the Ross Revenge for Caroline North.
It's Radio Caroline North, live from the Ross Revenge.
1368 AM.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Good afternoon, Festa Bye, 21 minutes before one. And Lucy, hello, you're live with Ray Harmer.
Hello.
Hello, Festa Bye.
I would just like to know why the borders have been opened to general people from the UK who are now infecting our children.
So, thank you, Lucy. I think if you look back, actually, the initial source of the infections are actually from returning residents and back to the island, and not actually from, certainly in initial stages, and from the sort of people who've been vaccinated. But I suppose my point is we are now in mitigation, and if we don't go back to normal, when do we go back to normal? And I'm very worried about actually having long-term rules that never change, and we've got to be really, really careful that we don't end up in a society where we have all sorts of restrictions and freedoms taken away from us. So I was very much the first one to be very strong on closing the borders in terms of what we had to do last year to give ourselves time and space, to give ourselves time and space to get a vaccine program. We've had that really successful. I think one of the, you know, we've done so well. We've got 88.5% of adults vaccinated. Can we do more? Yes, but we have to start moving back to normality.
Okay, Lucy?
Though children aren't vaccinated and the option isn't there for a child to be vaccinated, even if they have got underlying health issues, there is no option for those to be they aren't vaccinated, so their parents are vaccinated, if they want to be, of course, though the children aren't vaccinated, and if the parent has got any underlying health issues, then what happens then exactly?
So in those terms of actually children, and particularly those under 11, almost have almost no impact, and those that are older have significantly less. I mean, certainly the questions, I've had questions to me about asthma and things like that, but actually the evidence shows that it, in young people, it's really, really small risk. And I think we had to close the borders. It was absolutely important to restrict that. But now we're in a situation where you've got flus coming back in the winter. You've got all of these things, and the link between cases and hospitalisation is now broken, and we haven't seen any yet on the island. And yes, there will be some COVID, but that overwhelming of the hospital and of society has been broken. So now is the time to move forward. I have been, as I said, one of the most sort of thinking that we've got to keep the island safe last year, but now that we've got into this program, we have to move forward. If we're not careful, I've known people that lost jobs, lost opportunities, their lives have been really really badly affected because they've not been able to do things. And how long do we stop people actually living and going forward?
Is this affecting you personally, Lucy?
Yes, I've actually removed my son today from school because we had an email from Ballacameen High School to say that they've found COVID in the school, and they've now been gone into isolation. But the school hasn't closed to clean. St. Mary, I'm not sure if it's Cronkerberry School, Henry Bloom Noble School, all under 11, by the way, also St. Ninian's School. So, you know, when does it get to a point where all of our children are at risk and they're bringing it home? I, as a person, have health issues, so I'm now going to end up being put at risk because my child is in school and is going to come home and bring it back to us. I've only had one vaccination. I can't have my second one until September, even though I've requested to have it earlier. I'm not entitled to it because my doctor told me yesterday that that's just not how it is. Well, unfortunately, you're putting us at risk because of financial gain. That's what it all comes down to.
Why did he say that's not how it works? You couldn't have your jab till September.
When I spoke to my doctor yesterday, I asked her because I wanted to go away for a hospital appointment. And she said to me, no, it's a free for all. She said, if that's the case, if it was one rule for one, then everybody could have their second vaccine when they wanted to. But they'll open up drop-in centres where you can go in for one, but you can't go in for your second one, even though it was probably 6-7 weeks ago that I had my first vaccine. I can't then go in for my second one, but you're putting us at risk and allowing people to come over, though you're not going to allow them to have that second vaccine or children to be vaccinated.
Okay, Lucy, what's Comin's thinking on this, Ray Harmer?
Well, I think certainly I'll look into that individual case, but obviously if a second vaccine can be brought forward, that would make sense. So, Lucy, obviously, I'll bring that up. In terms of, as I say, the majority have now, if you like, been vaccinated. We are moving predominantly with 2+2. I've talked before how I'd encourage everybody to be vaccinated in that sense. The transmission rates are much less, the ill impact of those. But again, a lot of people who haven't been able to, you've seen people with problems in getting people in pharmacies, recruitment of teachers, all of those things are impacted the longer and longer you lock down and you don't get back to normal. So there are also issues around, you know, people having appointments, other hospital appointments. The longer that we take to go back to normal, it has massive impacts everywhere else. So there has to be a time. And obviously, if we can get more and more people vaccinated, and certainly I'll bring up about the fact that, you know, bringing forward, particularly if you're in a vulnerable group, because they were one of the first groups to be done going back in March.
So this is Comin's view now. We are now moving towards a new normal.
Exactly.
So there won't be any bad news tomorrow then?
No, in terms of you know, premises, supporting businesses in terms of ventilation, those kind of things, to say how that we can actually, not just for this, but going forward for all sorts of potential threats in the future, actually meet that threat.
Okay, Lucy, thanks for calling us today. We're with Ray Harmer, MHK Minister of Policy and Reform. A note in that also said, Mr. Harmer, you were responsible for the digital census. What went wrong?
Actually, it's been very successful. Now that
has anybody been nicked for not filling it?
No, because there never was. It was never. If there was one error, if you like, was not emphasising enough how much time people had. So, if I can give some statistics, we've got 35,000 completed. We believe that there are probably only 2,000 left that will need to be completed. So we're almost there in completing the census. In terms of paper copies, we're at 4,800. Now, if you compare, that's around sort of the total number, somewhere between 12 and 13%, depending on how many properties. But if you compare to how many was done in last time, it was only 20% digital. So we've completely reverse that round with nearly 90% digital, and getting all the information much, much quicker with less people and less resource and less cost than we did last time.
Did you do this just to take money off the post office?
No, not at all. It's about actually,
they seem to think you did.
No, because actually digital is about having that information. So I'll give you an example of what happens when somebody puts a paper form. And we always said that paper was available. You could ring up as well. And so in terms of paper copies, they're all re-input by an individual into the system. So the best way to get information, good information, because another thing that's come out with a paper form is that it's much more easy to, if you like, the form is a lot more complicated. It's easy for sections not to be filled in, or other sections to be filled in. In the digital experience, it actually takes you through that. And we always knew that there would be some people that couldn't do it online, and that's why a paper copy was available. I think the problem is saying that people thought that they had to do it on the 30th. It wasn't a case of you had to do it on the 30th. You had to just say where you were on the 30th, and that's an important difference. So we're still following up. We're in a much better place than we were last time in 2016, and now it's a case of if it's only when people don't want to fill it in and don't want to provide that information, which is for all our benefit, to be able to manage and sort of develop and plan our resources.
Okay, a note in from Colin to Mr. Harvey. You said you've had both jabs. Is your vaccination record viewable on the NHS? Are you on the NHS app?
I am, but I think that was a unfortunately, that in some ways the NHS app was a bit of a red herring, because you only, for actually going to the UK, for most of us, you don't need the NHS app. The card will do, and I think we're with the NHS app, we're right behind Wales. So I think when Wales gets theirs switched on, it will, because although the NHS app actually shows you two vaccinations, it won't give you that QR code, which is needed for international travel. I am told, though, that if you contact 111, then you can get they will produce a certificate if necessary. But remember, for the vast majority of us who won't go anywhere outside either the island or the UK or Southern Ireland, what's known as common travel area, for us, actually, our little card will do the trick.
Okay. A note in just said, Mr. Harmer, our children are missing school. They're in isolation. People are losing money because they're in isolation. How can you say that it's up to people to take their own precautions when people are arriving on the Isle of Man, perhaps infected? We have some unvaccinated population. Where do those people who are vulnerable fit in this? There's a kind of between the lines meaning that we're going to move on. Some people are vulnerable. Some people are unvaccinated. Some people can't have the vaccine, but we're pushing on anyway.
Yeah, I think we need to remember, in terms of the numbers, the numbers who can't get vaccinated are small, and we must look after them. And obviously, there's still issues around healthcare settings, not being able to do that if you've just travelled. And in terms of those other mitigations, supporting businesses to put ventilation. But I come back to the point, if not now, then when? When is going to be the time when you would start to relax? And we have to. And the other big issue is that the break is between cases and hospitalisations. So if you take, for example, we know that in children that the threat is infinitely less than it is or was through older people and those in that were vulnerable in those groups. So we've, that part has been done. Again, those who haven't been vaccinated, there's 8,000 there. You know, if they were to get vaccinated, that's going to protect all of us. So again, I would really encourage all of those that can be vaccinated to call and register and, you know, protect us and protect all of us, protect the community.
Okay, that's it for Man in Line today. Ray Harmer, thanks for being with us.
Thank
Good
you.
Good to talk to you.
Thank you.
You see us at festivals. You see us at the races. You see us everywhere. Because we are St John Ambulance and we are proud to be a Manx charity. St John Ambulance volunteers help the people of the island when they need them the most. That's why all profits made from our commercial training go straight back into supporting our volunteers and providing opportunities for children from 5 years old to develop life-saving skills. For more information on how you can help, call 674 387.
Local business? Nicola Bowker & Co. Need an accountant? Nicola Bowker & Co. Want accounts you can trust? Nicola Bowker & Co. Whether a sole trader or large company, for your free initial meeting, call today on 861 271.
Looks like the Manx Shearwater has returned early this year.
Shearwater? Your investment plan with Ramsay Crookhall?
No, the bird.
Oh!
But you're right. My Shearwater should make some impressive returns too.
Wish I could afford to invest.
You can. It's flexible and really affordable. Invest a lump sum or a monthly amount. It'd be a great way for you to get started.
Shearwater from Ramsay Crookhall. For 75 years, the island's investment specialist, offering a wide range of services to make your money work for you. Call 717171 or visit ramsaycrookhall.com. Licensed and regulated by the Isle of Man Financial Services Authority.
Summer is here, and you can make the most of it with double your data from Manx Telecom. If you're currently on a 50 gigabyte tariff, you can upgrade and double your data for free. That's 100 gigs of on-island data for your current tariff price. Call into our Strand Street store or phone 624 64 for details, terms and conditions. Double your data, double the fun this summer with Manx Telecom.
The Man in Line with Andy Witt. The Isle of Man General Election 2021 coverage on Manx Radio.
The general election is on September 23rd this year. Claire Barber standing in Douglas East. Also standing is Joni Farragher, Peter Gilmore, Michael Josom, John Jochen and Christine Urquhart. John Moss spoke to Claire Barber and asked her about the major infrastructure project in her constituency, the Promenade.
It's been an absolute fiasco, and I think our final report was very clear on that.
Well, who's responsible for it being a fiasco?
So we've been very frustrated around how the project management has happened in terms of the promenade. We've felt that some of the elements that have been placed on people within the department as it's currently structured is probably outside of what they're normal ability would be able to achieve. And so we've been very careful not to say it's not a person necessarily, it's the bigger picture.
Are you saying the company wasn't up to the job?
No, it's not the company. The company can only work within the framework they were given. There has been miscommunications from the start. When you looked from the beginning of the promenade scheme, where the businesses were a side note at the bottom of an impact statement that was one side.
Who should have noticed that at the word go? Who should have thought, yeah, that's important, we've got to deal with that before we start?
So for me, that would have been what your project management team should have been looking at.
But surely someone over top should have said, yeah, that's what they should have been doing and told them to do it.
Well, I would suggest that a comprehensive project management team could have come up with the fact that there should have been a clear impact assessment that went into far more detail than it did. And when I'm speaking, you know, I was speaking to businesses and constituents who live along the promenade right from the beginning, and it's been a huge piece of work over the last 2.5 years. And again, you know, those stories people were telling were harrowing. They were really horrendous, and I don't think that was coming out early on, which is why the committee chose to look into it. And we structured it, you know, over three reports in the end. One to look at the failures in terms of project management and the wider ability of government to manage large scale projects and to work in the realms of contracts that they weren't familiar with or used to. also to look at the impact on businesses and those people who lived in the area. Because even now we've got, once work started to pick up a little bit of pace, we've got hotels where 7 a.m. people are drilling. People are coming down here for a nice relaxed weekend, and 7 a.m. Bing, the diggers are on, and people are now complaining in the hotel saying, hang on a minute, you know, we've come here, we thought we'd get a lie-in.
Yeah,
you know,
and that's Irish just scheme, a thing of the years past. Years ago, the Irish scheme had the same effect on hotels.
Yeah, but it's the prolonged nature of that. You know, if there had been a short period of time, a year even, but that people knew, it's the fact that this has been extended and extended. Only last week, we've seen another month's extension. That's the month till the point that the project finishes, but then there'll be the 4 weeks rectification period. That's if the rectifications can be done within 4 weeks, although they have to be. If they can't, I mean, it's not like we're going to say, okay, you've rectified as much as you can in 4 weeks, off your bob. We're then going to have to find the work to do everything else, and that's without addressing the issues that, you know, I do still have concerns around, that we haven't done this to the highest specification. There's elements that have been de-scoped from the work, and yet the budgets have remained the same. And I say we've pulled all that into our report. We are absolutely clear that there will likely be a need for the Public Accounts Committee and the next administration to look further into this, how this got out of hand, and how it seems when you've got a big project, it almost becomes a fait accompli that you can put additional money to it. Because actually, what can you do once you've got the holes in the road and people are suffering, is just keep throwing money at it.
Can I just talk about the Public Accounts Committee? You're on the Public Accounts Committee, you're also on, I think, an Infrastructure Committee. How useful are these? Do they achieve anything?
I find them to be incredibly useful, but actually I'd like to see longer term a development of scrutiny. So at the minute, I think there's almost a little bit of a discomfort from Comin over scrutiny, and it's seen as a, you know, this is what you've done wrong. I'd love to see scrutiny happening far more on the emerging policy and the developing policy, and from the ministers actually seeing that as a real asset. Because if we can develop and spot things and talk to the public and act as a conduit early on, hopefully we can prevent us getting to the point where we're saying, oh my goodness, look how awful this is, to saying, if you don't sort this, you will end up with this problem. And actually, let's work together, because ultimately, we all want to achieve the right outcomes, which is projects that come in on budget, less disruption to the people who live in the local area, and ultimately a benefit, net benefit to the economy of the Isle of Man.
For more general election coverage, including candidate profiles, full interviews, videos, manifestos and more, visit the Manx Radio General Election mini-site at manxradio.com.
A note in from Mal said, Andy, apparently you can ring 111 and go and ask for a list of cancellations for vaccinations. Well, that's Mal. I don't know whether that's true, but that's what Mal says. And Carrie said, Andy, I agree with Ray Helmer. We just need to open up. We need to get on. Otherwise, we're going to be prisoners of COVID forevermore. A note in from Castle Rushen High School. Castle Rushen High School has been notified that a member of the school community has tested positive for COVID-19. They're self-isolating, contact tracing underway. Following advice from public health, Castle Rushen will continue to be open to all students, but interaction with other schools is being limited where possible, and only essential activities taking place. Thanks to MHK Ray Harmer for Policy and Infrastructure Today, and producer Barry Redfern. I'm Andy Wint, back with Man in Line tomorrow at high noon.